Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Neil and Kristen Business Psychic Hour. Here we are. We're a little late. Connectivity issues, but we're on and hoping to hear from some of you today. 914-338-0164 is the call number. Please press 1 if you'd like to speak with us. Our listeners and our callers may join us on Facebook and on Twitter. Those accounts are linked on our Blog Talk Radio profile, Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic. And Facebook and Twitter are the sites where you may join us. And you may also follow us here on Blog Talk Radio. We hope that you do.
You know, this Friday, we will have completed 1,000 shows together. 1,000 over a period of about, 10 years?
It will be 10 years. Yeah, 10 years. Wow, can't believe it. 10 years in August.
So that's a lot of people we've read over the years.
Well, and, yeah.
I mean, it's 1,000 shows, not 1,000 people.
And, right. I mean, and the show's changed dramatically. I mean, in some ways not. But I mean, I didn't even do readings when the first show first started.
Is that right? You didn't?
No, you know that.
When did you start doing readings?
I don't know. I started doing readings, I don't know, maybe 2016, 2017, but really more increasing in the last couple of years, or, you know, there's legitimate psychic content.
Well, you know, I mean, it can be intimidating if you're going to do a reading on the radio.
Yeah, I mean, it's cold. You're reading cold. I mean, generally, I mean, of course, there are people that call repeatedly, so you know them. So those aren't exactly cold readings, but certainly there are people that you encounter for the first time, and that's a cold reading. You know nothing about them, and there's not even a face to put with the name, you know. So it's more limited insofar that you don't have them sitting in front of you. There's not things that you can pick up about their physicality and their energy field in that way. So it's a little bit more challenging just to work with the voice.
Yeah, I think for the most part, I think all psychics go through a process of getting in touch with their skills if they should have those particular skills. I know I had to get through, I was fortunate enough to have basic psychic skills, so I didn't make a decision. I think I'll be a psychic. Being a psychic was just part of the fabric of my life. I was a precocious child, and I just was a psychic. I would say things and know things, and it happened that way. When I decided to, but that was sort of a creative, random expression of my life. There wasn't anything academic about it, or I didn't present it as any kind of plan for one's life. I would just say psychic things. And
careful.
You know, you over the weekend you were on a boat with four people. Oh, and I bet your father's name is David. You know, things like that. But you're not at that age, and I was under 10, you know, you're not quick to talk about how to deal with life
Right. You don't have that type of experience or, you know, obviously it takes life experience for starters to be able to talk about things like that. But additionally, education is helpful and, interpersonal relationships, learning about, you know, how to interact with people and observing behavior and things like that all contribute to be able to analyze people and read them properly. But go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I've had when people hear when I was a kid and I would be psychic, they would go, wow, how did you know that? Hey, tell me, am I going to win the lottery? Am I going to get that job? They would say those things and I would answer them. I go, yeah, you're going to get it or you're not going to get it. Not be accurate. So those kinds of things I could do. If you asked me a question, I could answer the question and for the most part be accurate. Or I could say, I'd wake up and go, oh, Aunt Sally's going to call today. And then Aunt Sally would call. That kind of stuff. So there was a basic, the process of being a psychic can start off that way. I guess there are little children who say more significant things than I was saying. I started to think about the world and the world situation was probably around 12.
Gosh, then, you really were stunted.
Yeah. Around 63, 64. And by the time 1966 came around, and I read The War of the Worlds, something came over me then. I was reading The Time Machine, H.G. Wells. Something came over me then where I started to make deeper predictions. And something kind of went through me. It's almost like you, like when you go in an elevator and that feeling you have.
Diarrhea.
Sorry. Yeah, my elevator is one in the laboratory. The feeling just gave me an incentive to start to think about higher and deeper things, and then I started reading daily the newspaper when I was about 7 or 8. So when I would read the newspaper, I would start to see things. And then in grammar school, people were morphing in front of me, teachers especially, in the classroom where I was able to stare at somebody for a long time. And then I got to a point, it was really weird. I remember when I was about 7, I was laying down on the grass with my friends. And I said to them, what is nothingness? I remember saying this to them. I said, how do you define nothingness as long as you're there? What if there was nobody there, then what is something if you don't comprehend it? And I start to drive myself crazy because I get to the point where I think there was only blackness.
And that was the point that you were institutionalized.
That was when I was institutionalized. And but I really enjoyed the food at the hospital. and I became a chef for a while. So I would start to think about the idea that what nothingness is all about. But I think what that did was it started to feed into my psyche. And it took my psyche into a different place. And when I had deja vu, I just wouldn't experience it. I would grasp it and examine it and start to think about things. And in the moment of deja vu, I would try to gather as much information as I could that seemed to be coming in from some strange intuitive, this has happened before situation. So those things were part of the process. Then I got to the point where when you rub your eyes and you close your eyes and you rub your eyes and you stop rubbing them, it always looked like I was in an airplane looking down at a city at night with the lights. And then I read, when I was a little boy, that was the cosmic map of the universe in some esoteric book on psychic energy, huge book. But I was reading that back then. And I thought, that's a code. And when I would close my eyes, But then after that, when I'd close my eyes, I'd see figures walking around beneath my eyelids. I would actually see people, shadows, silhouettes walking around. And then, of course, I got to other things manifested where spirits came to visit me at night. I'd wake up and there'd be a little boy staring at me, just staring at me in bed. And his head was all bashed in. He was wearing a baseball uniform. And I was frightened. And he seemed real. He didn't say anything, just stared at me and smiled. And then I learned that a couple of days before, a person in Little League got hit by a baseball bat and his skull cracked and he died. And I thought, my God, that must have been him. So I sought to have these energy fields. And then not to mention my grandfather, who became my mentor, my teacher, started to really get me involved with spirits to the point at which I said I was rather afraid of them. And finally he decided, okay, we're going to conquer that. He locked me in a closet where spirits stayed in his apartment, his duplex. And I spent the night in a locked closet with spirits. I was scared to death, but they were there. I couldn't get out. And he woke me, when I woke up in the morning, he said, well, are you afraid of them anymore? Did they kill you? I went, no. He goes, did they scare you? I said, yes. But did they hurt you? No. He goes, well, now you know. You don't have to be afraid of them. So then things evolved from there. So when we get to the idea where someone such as yourself comes into a reading and you might have had some interest in crystals or rocks or tarot, or maybe you felt a little bit inclined to at times feel intuitive.
Finish what you're saying, then I'll respond. Go. No, you were in the middle of thought.
That's a big leap from saying, I think I'll do a reading. I think I'll go into somebody else's energy and do a reading. Because when you're going into somebody else's energy, you're role-playing. It's almost like role-playing. And now you're not playing yourself. You're taking your brain and you're putting your brain in someone else's energy field to see with your psychic abilities what is going on in their life. And then from there, you scratch out visions of the future or situations. And when you get more advanced, you discover karma, why it's happening, what it's all about, until you don't have to think about it. You do a reading, and in 5 minutes, you've completed the reading.
Right. I will say that my experience went beyond just being interested in crystals. I mean, I definitely had early experiences where there were definitive psychic events that happened with dreams and premonitions and, you know, picking up on people's energy. However, that wasn't the lane I was in terms of the direction of my life. So I didn't have the advantage, number one, of being, I would say, acutely psychic like you were. One, I wasn't acutely psychic, but I had definitely significant experiences or psychic events in my life that were outside the norm of average experience, for sure. So that did set the tone for my interest. I was interested doing stuff in school with, you know, doing psychic games with teachers and friends and things like that at a fairly young age. But, and you wouldn't expect that to happen in school, you know, but it did, like on our lunch hour, et cetera. But I think the other part of it for me, because there was interest in doing readings, you know, being a subject. So I would seek out different psychics throughout the years, then go through kind of famines where I wouldn't talk to any psychics and so on and so forth. But it would, you know, it would weave in and out of my life, psychic energy, interest in, like you said, crystals and all that, numerology, astrology. But what was I going to say? I think that, you know, I was always the friend that people came to for advice and talk to, you know, because I was a good listener. So I think that also helped graduate me to the place I'm at now, of course, ever developing and evolving psychically, but being able to absorb someone's energy and give advice based on intuition and now more specific psychic validations that I'm getting, you know, because I was always the one listening to people, always. Right. And this is what you need to do. This is what you don't. And I know you advised your friend similarly.
Yeah.
So.
Well, not too many. Maybe they do, but from my history, not too many people talk about the third ear. They talk about the third eye. The third ear, and we say I would listen. I was a good listener. Now, that's in the physical realm, you're a good listener. And that involves, you know, intellectual evaluations and
right.
advice. When you're a
verbal
good listener in the psychic world,
six.
Your third ear extends beyond the dimensions, the senses. It actually picks up energy from an astral realm that could come from an entity or a spirit or a guide, or it could come from some attitude of a vibration that then gets interpreted as a language. And I probably it was intuitive and serendipitous on my part, but I would, if I listened to a bee buzzing around,
you would hear a language.
I got to understand what the buzz would mean, different buzzes, different sounds. And if I conveyed a thought to the bee, land on my finger, I'm going to put my finger out, land my finger. And I conveyed that visualizing that I was buzzing. I wouldn't buzz, but I would visualize the bee would land on my finger. And I was astonished that I had this, that I made this discovery. But then I would oftentimes wake up, once in a while I'd take a nap or something, wake up. And when I woke up, I kept seeing these two small children that were like observing me while I was sleeping. And as soon as I opened my eyes, they giggled. They were like ghosts. They looked like humans. And they kind of like a cross between a ghost-looking human and a person with flesh and blood. They were wearing clothes. When I woke up, they giggled and disappeared. And I swore I saw them. So I started to become somewhat amazed about that, being a kid. And then sometimes I would be like in the bathroom and I'd hear someone go, "Kneel." And I'd either look in the mirror or turn around and see a child, and then the child disappeared. So I thought, there's something out there that knows about me, that's making connections. Now, they didn't, at that point, they weren't giving me messages. They were just popping in and making a greeting and then disappearing. And I started to discover that I could, with a certain amount of breathing and energy, I could keep them there longer. Because when I saw them, I would be startled and they'd pop, they'd disappear. But what I did, and I guess I did this just innately, I started to think, well, I want to be real calm and just be real relaxed, not do anything with my vibration, and they wouldn't disappear. They would actually approach me. And then they would whisper words, not just my name. So I started to develop this language with the spirit world. And then found out in time that they also deliver messages.
Okay, that's terrific. I just got a bit distracted because I see we have a caller in the queue. So my apologies for not paying 100% attention. It's Kay. Hi, Kay.
Hello. I just want to let you guys know I lost my job yesterday.
Oh my God!
Lost her
job. Yeah, with this crazy manager.
Yeah.
1.966.
Yeah. No. Oh boy. That's bad. Yeah. Okay. So last time we were talking about the potential of you getting new jobs, there was nothing really that you had seen at that point. And we talked about the meeting that you had, which you thought went better than expected, though I remember us saying that we thought it wasn't going to go well, but we try to help
promote
a better outcome. So what was the reason for the termination?
That is a perfectly good question, because the past month I have been doing all these things that had been laid out for me. And in hindsight now, I mean, even in the middle of it, I was kind of questioning why I was doing this, but I realized it was really a setup, because I was writing out all these SOPs for the job descriptions and all the duties, just a lot of things that it just didn't make sense. It seemed more of a waste of a time to spend that much energy doing things. But now, hindsight, it makes sense. She was pregnant.
So you think, wait, I'm going to interrupt you. So you think you were, like, given busy work or something to distract you from what really needs to be done?
Yes. All right. And all the work that I was doing pretty much sets her up so that when she, if she should hire someone new, the duties are lined out. I mean, I had to create SOPs and flow charts and just a lot of things that didn't make sense. I mean, there was projects, we had our manual, a guide that's already in place, and it was like a 44-page document that kind of detailed things. But I ended up having to, and I kept asking, am I rewriting this? It wasn't so much rewriting. It was just work that really had nothing to do with contracts, what I was a contract manager. But I was revamping the business description of what we do. So now she has all my work, all the flowcharts, all the SOPs, all the designs, and it was due yesterday. I got everything completed on the 14th, and then I have a meeting with her in HR, because I scheduled the meeting so I could touch bases to see the status of how things were going and just, you know, kind of keep up to date. She canceled my meeting, scheduled a meeting with HR, the three of us, and then I get my notice.
Well, they have to give you some reason why you're being terminated. I mean, I would imagine that there would be something communicated. What did they say?
They said that there was the request for performance was not satisfactory, but she signed off on everything that I've done. So it's kind of like contradictory. I really believe it was because I went to HR on her. Most people have just dealt with her and or just dealt with it and left. Nobody really has complained the way that I did.
So now you have to, well, I mean, on the bright side, you're eligible for unemployment benefits because they terminated you. So they have to pay.
That's correct.
So that's going to help you sustain yourself until you find something else. But the unfortunate part, obviously, is the fact that you lost this job, and that's on your resume now.
Yes.
Sometimes in life, we make a choice. We stay in abusive situations because despite how we feel, there's a safety factor. So whatever the reasons are, good or bad, we stay in abusive situations. Or we make a choice to leave and change our life. This woman is apparently abusing you. But if you, for instance, put on a level from 1 to 10 how this woman abused you, what point would you give it, and explain why you would give it that point?
I would definitely give it a 10, as the most I've been extremely abusive. And reason being, the reason I can give that number is because of the manner in which she spoke to me. Actually, she does it to a lot of people, but I think because I was one of the people, and I noticed this with our team, I would speak up. If she says something, I was on a call once with someone who reports to her, one of my colleagues, and I had given that person some information, and it made sense to her. So when we got in the meeting, there was like a bigger meeting, and the person brought the comment up, or I brought it up, and then my colleague did not speak up. And I was like, well, you know, I called her name. I said, isn't this information that you give me? She's like, oh, well, I think so. And anyway, it was kind of, she was very sheepish. Okay, so later on, we had a one-on-one meeting, just the three of us, and that's when the colleague acknowledged that the information I had given to her was correct. Our manager said, oh, well, okay, you should have just told me that when we were on the call earlier. And I thought to myself, you probably made it so uncomfortable for that person that she was truly afraid to even speak up to say that the information was right, but scared to speak up, you know, speak up in front of her. So she had that type of behavior where she was very intimidating, but she didn't intimidate me.
So
and
I have
know
a question.
That was a problem for her.
Did she? Do you think that she has any bias? Does she know your sexual preference? Is there a
yes.
racial difference? Is there anything in that regard that do you think contributed to this discordant relationship between the two of you?
It's so interesting you say that because I can't say it's a racial thing because the other African Americans on our team who she seemed to
like
get along with very well and then other people. Sexual preference, I don't know. I do know that she is 43 years old, never married, no children, Jewish, and has a sister who has done all the quote-unquote supposedly right thing, you know, married, has children, married a doctor, you know, those kind of things. So she's not done what that...
The traditional path.
She
hasn't done that.
Yeah, the traditional path. Yes. So I can't say that my sexual preference would be an issue, but it might be in that I'm living my truth and she may not be able to live hers fully. If anything, I think it has more to do with the fact that she just can't, she did not intimidate me. I mean, well, I would speak up, and that was a big hiccup for her, really big hiccup.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I obviously there are cases for wrongful termination, but do you want to go through that process of getting an attorney and, you know, fighting something that may not be successful and not work in your favor?
Right.
I don't know.
The question is, when you brought up or challenged her, were you within the confines of legitimate conversation? Because if you have the right to speak,
right.
You have to. But are you African American?
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, if she has had let's go back to the old days. If she has had an attitude that black people should be subservient. You know,
right,
they're good
right.
black people. They obey, you know, like the old plantation days.
Yeah.
So if we go
right,
back
right.
there and you challenge her, which is getting her on her nerves,
yeah.
and then she thinks,
yes.
a black's going to challenge me? No way. I'm putting her in her
right.
place.
I mean, she,
yeah.
as a Jewish woman, I mean, you're in the South, and Jews, obviously,
yeah.
historically, are also discriminated against. However,
oh, yeah.
Jews and blacks, historically, there's conflict.
They're actually
exactly.
not.
No, there is. There
well,
is conflict.
Jews and blacks, Jews, no. Jews and blacks.
I know.
There may be conflicts in where you're coming from, but Jews and blacks also
identified with one
another.
I see
identified
that.
Identified with one another, and there was a common... There was a common bond there.
Maybe in the West Coast states, but like in New York and things like that on the East Coast,
right.
there's problems.
That's true.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah,
what
yeah.
you can do, I mean...
Are you aware of that, Kay? I mean, we're kind
I
of...
I definitely am aware of that because and that was one of the conversations I had with her earlier on because she had...
Oh.
And someone else within our company... when I had to do the introduction meetings and she gave me a list of names and, you know, speaking to this assistant director, this director, you know, just doing the intro,
I had someone, and I can't even remember him now, but it was like my first 2 weeks. This person actually told me, it was a male. He said, how she is difficult. He's speaking, and I didn't even, I was asking this. I'm just like, hi, I'm Kay, the new manager, da, da, da. And he was like, okay, so, and he was talking to me about being easy on myself, about how, taking it easy, not being too difficult on myself when it comes to learning the material and acknowledging it. And he said, yes, because your manager is very difficult. And I was kind of like, Now, this is 2 weeks in, which I had already started picking up, but he's like, she's very difficult. He said, I remember when I first started, she and I got into a big heated argument. And I'm thinking to myself, why is this man telling me this? But now in hindsight, listen, he said, I remember asking questions and she's snippy and saying stuff like, we've already gone over this. How many times do we have to have this conversation? And if you remember, I said that was the conversation I had with her several times. And he said that he told her, we'll have this conversation as many times as I need to make sure I understand all of this information. So he being a black male and having that same kind of conversation. But yes, I am very familiar with that attitude. But I told her a lot of times, it's cultural, it's regional differences. In the South, we might say, let me be clear on saying this, or, you're in that fast-paced New Yorker, you got to go. So we've had the conversation. I have done everything that has been asked of me, even though I questioned whether I spoke it up or I thought in my mind, why am I doing this? But I have completed the task. It really went to hell when I went to HR on her. As long as I just dealt with it, that's when she, kept going, putting this craziness on me. As soon as I went to HR on her, her whole attitude just became vindictive.
Is she from the South?
Nope. Born and raised New York.
So she's from the East Coast. So,
yep.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Not to say that people from the East Coast, I'm not trying to make a generalization about whites from the East Coast being prejudiced necessarily, but anyway, it's just interesting that that's where she's from, and we didn't know that.
And I've seen the difference in how she behaves, because her manager is a...
Okay, we lost you. Can't hear her anymore.
She
cut out.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I said her manager is a black female, and we have been on calls, the three of us, where I've heard her pretty much grovel. She feels sound like a little weakling on that call, but then turn right around, get off that call, and be snippy with me. And I'm thinking, but you were just so submissive with your manager. Again, I think it was me being that person that just was not going to allow her to keep just speaking to me in any way. I wasn't going to do it.
And that could have challenged her. That could have brought up feelings on multiple levels, you challenging her and maybe, some latent racism or whatever, or jealousy that you're, you've accepted your identity and you're living your life as the person you want to live it as, whereas she's more confused about her path. But
there might have been some overwhelming factors for this person, but somewhere in that overwhelming factor, she might have had a clause that blacks shouldn't be above whites. I'm just assuming. So she had to wait for the opportunity to occur where she could strike out. Whereas in the other situation, she doesn't have the capability, it's not right, but it was there. And it seems like you're a very good worker. There was, she set you up. So, we get deeper into it. Obviously, we can get into tribal rivalries. We can get into a personal rivalry that you had with her via a past life. But, It's strange. I remember being, I went to grammar, you know, I was very popular in grammar school, and I bought this book called The Jackie Robinson Story, and it was all about the black baseball player, and on the cover had that paper leaf over the cover, so you could, there were pictures of Jackie Robinson, and you can still go online and see the book, I'm amazed, but there's pictures of him, and there's pictures of him holding a baseball bat and sliding into home plate.
I know which book you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And I got beat up for bringing that book. My friends beat me up, calling me, you know, the N-word, you know, you're an N-lover.
Lover.
And I really got beat up for it. I brought the, you know, I brought the book back to school. Now, I wasn't protected by the school, which was strange. And they and their answer was, well, maybe you shouldn't bring that book to school. That's very nice you're reading.
Yeah.
You know, you're upsetting people. Well, I brought to school anyway. But when you know, when you get into situations like that, and it gets, I mean, even as a white person, I don't compare myself from white to black, but I know that just in reading, I mean, so I didn't have a prejudice on my body, so I knew about black writers and entertainers, you know, my little kid Scott Joplin and Garden Parks. And I loved the black culture. I loved it. Africa, I wanted to always go to Africa. So, you know, we get into those zones. Now, if my skin was black and I had brought the book to school, I might have had suffered a concussion.
Yeah, right. Right. Right.
You know, I mean, you can always go online and give your speech about the company and what you feel. You have a right to do that.
Yes. We can, I mean, she can also take action, but I don't know if it's worthwhile for you to try to fight this termination or sue.
Right.
Because that's the headache.
And honestly, I don't. I'm in a weird space, and I mentioned this to you guys last week. I'm in a better emotional space. I thought I would be more broken up and devastated about not having a job than I am. I think right now I am just so relieved that I don't have to deal with this evil anymore. I mean, now my new job is making sure I get something new. But honestly, it's like, I woke up this morning with a peace that, God, I don't have to get on and deal with her energy again today. It's felt, I think that's what I'm working through. It's like, why am I okay with not worrying about this right this second? I don't have a job. I need an income.
We get back to our original discussion, Kay. You probably were also serving a karmic energy being there. And the karmic energy is now terminated. So somewhere in your mind, your comfort level can be attached to something that deep down in your intuition, you know you're going to be okay and you move on to the next assignment on this planet. So how many years were you working there?
Months.
How many months?
10 months.
So just under 10 months, your master number is 9. So now the master number is applied to a month category.
9 months you work there, and the 10th month you're fired.
Wow.
You completed a full 9 months, but you were in the midst of your 10th month. Now you have a 9 in your master number, and you have a 9 in your day.
Right.
And so, you know, we're expecting, and I don't know, we say in the last reading that she could be fired, or did we say she wouldn't be?
Wait, well, there wasn't even a question of whether she was going to be fired or not. Guys, it wasn't a question.
No.
You were just continuing at the job without any further options for employment other places. So you had exhausted all interviews.
Correct.
And so we were hoping something else would come in so she could leave.
Exactly.
It wasn't even a good discussion about firing or, you know, I don't think you suspected you were going to be fired from the job.
No, none of that. It's just, as I stated, whenever I went to HR, and technically she had to go on record because the HR business partner said something early on when I first contacted her. She made a point, and it was like she was really upset, and she said what was bothering her was if my manager would have all the information or all the complaints or concerns that she was relaying to me or the behavior in which she displayed to me was such a problem with my work. Her concern was, why has this manager not communicated that to HR? Why has she not gone on record with that? And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, okay, so they're covering their behinds because they want to say, well, if all these problems the manager has with me or I'm supposed to be so difficult or whatever the issue is, that the way she's treating me, then why has it not been enough to get to HR? So when she I made the request, HR contacted her, well, kind of, sort of, and maybe not directly. I don't trust them either, but it's just saying that, you know, they want to address the issues that that supposedly was going on. As soon as that happened, I noticed she stopped being as vocal, but it was becoming more manipulative.
Right.
The way she would speak. It was like doing things, writing out, again, rewriting stuff that's in place, but making it, she's taking advantage of my foreknowledge and my capability of design and creating this. And as soon as I got it done, it's like, oh, okay, well, it wasn't up to par. Well, she signed off on it. How is it not up to par?
Yeah. I mean, you did doing it, no offense. And going to, you go to human resources for protection. That's why they're there. And the process should have been, well, let's arrange a meeting and we'll all talk and see if we can resolve this issue. But what happened was the legitimate phases of going through this and you doing the right thing according to following through on a conflict or a problem, you were punished. And that,
yeah.
You know, it's just unfortunate.
And
because
often,
on a human level, it's disgusting. If there's something spiritually or karmically going on to where this is part of your journey and you need to move on, well, that's another question. But it does not excuse the rude and obnoxious behavior of this company.
Well, and the thing is about human resources, though it's in place to help protect employees. So many times human resources is they're really protecting the company,
yeah,
not the people. So
that's it. I've always said that. That's so true. And I said that. I said, and that was what I took her comment to mean when the human resources business partner said that. I heard what she was saying. Her question was, if this is such an issue, why has this manager not brought this to us? Because their fear is, okay, now this employee has an opportunity to complain and go to, you know, file legal action, and we're not covered. That's how I understood it. So you're right.
Well,
I've always said HR.
Yeah.
Me, right now, my concern is, I need a new
job,
career. I need that to come through now. Well, I don't say now, but you know what I mean. I need that. I can now put all my energy and focus on that.
Into finding a job.
Yeah.
And you're not having to go to work and then, you know, look for a job on the side. You can devote all your energy to
right.
it. You can collect unemployment.
Right.
So you've got some financial, do they give you a severance package or anything like that? Do they do that one? They don't give you a severance package when you get terminated. Do they?
They did not. They did not offer anything. Nope.
Sometimes they do,
I think.
But,
yeah.
So now you have, and do you get COBRA benefits? I mean, are you able to keep your health insurance? I mean, it's very expensive to do COBRA,
yeah.
I think. So
it is very expensive. It is very expensive, but there was an option for that.
And what are you going to do in that regard?
I will have to try to get COBRA because I do need to maintain. Fortunately, I just went to the doctor and had my, you know, annual visit, so I have my medication that I have for the next 3 months. You know, prayerfully, it will not take me 3 months to find a job, but I do need to do that so I can at least maintain some level of health care.
Well,
which is extremely expensive. You're
55 years old. You're 19 years past your karma of 36. And, I mean, you have a coupling of numbers in your year, which equals 12, which is your month. Now, it would have seemed to me that you getting a job by just numerical factoring would be within 2 months. Sometime between now and the end of 2 months, you'll have a position. Probably a much better position because you have suffered through karma, so usually there's not a duplication going on unless you have other karmic journeys you have to get through. But let's not consider that right now. Let's consider on focusing
right.
the universe and getting a good, healthy, well-paying job where you're accepted into the fold of the individual consciousness as a collective whole, and that, you know, you call us with a lot better news. We're not making any predictions. We're evaluating numerical energies and making some general conclusions about where your journey may take the next.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate any prayers and support and any energy that you send this way. Again, I feel like I should be, well, you know, my flesh side said I should be in a panic and stressed out and crying and devastated, but the spiritual side of me and just is not there. It's like, okay, that's past me now, and I don't have to worry about that.
Well, that's good. I mean, at least you're in a – I mean, I think that is a better space to be in when approaching – applying for other positions, because if you're in a space of devastation and stress, then that's not going to help you attract a new job whatsoever. So if you have a positive attitude, you're much more likely to get hired, but you got to start looking, obviously, and you know find something you're interested in.
In the trick of numerology, Kay, you've gone through it's been 19 years since you were 36 years old. And if we take the two twos in months and day and put them together, we get a four there. But what's left over is a one and a nine.
Now that's one.
So you actually went back in time to this job, which had karma, past life karma. But nine is the eternal number. So it's hard to knock a nine down. And so in that regard, I would assume that you're going to skip. You're
resilient.
Know, you're on your feet, and you'll make it, and you'll move on.
Do you know her birthday, by the way? I mean, it's not that it matters, really, because you're moving on. But
I do not know her birthday.
Okay, wow. No worries.
Yeah,
that's okay. I mean, just it would have been interesting to see what her birthday was compared to yours and what
the
connection might be. Between the two of you, I mean, obviously there is one, but identifying it more specifically with the birthday would be interesting. But looking forward, you know, put this behind you, apply for unemployment, start looking for other work, and keep that positive headspace, and definitely keep in touch with us.
Definitely. Thank you so much. I know I've taken up a lot of time, but I do appreciate
you.
No, I really adore so much. You guys have been such great inspiration and such positivity for me, and I'm just grateful.
Well, we appreciate your comments so much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Yes. Bye.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. It's, you know, these individual stories that one represents a whole can sometimes represent a whole group consciousness. So, you know, in her case, she's just one African-American woman, but, you know, and not everything has to be applied to race. I mean, people just don't like people.
Right. I mean, we've never been fired from any job, so we cannot relate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait. I got my list of...
Boy.
I can burn down a farm, a whole farm at the place that never happened. You know, but you see, her job is a commanding force to be social. She has to. She can't just do something on her own.
Well, no, the whole. I mean, she's in healthcare, so I mean, she's her whole basis for employment is social. I mean, social work. She manages cases for insurance companies.
Yeah.
So that's...
So it's hard for her to just do it on her own. She can't do it on
But the thing is, you know, it's interesting because on the last show I said, Kay, would you, if you could turn back time, would you have not left your job that you were stable in for this job 10 months ago?
That's what Cher asked.
What?
Cher asked that question.
Wait, what was the question?
If you could turn back
time. If you could turn back time. Okay, got it.
if
you could find some way.
Yeah. She's in the health field, but it's in terms of collecting. We recently did a reading with someone who collects...
Bill collector
for...
Well, no, it was not with the... No, it was with the spouse of a bill collector. It wasn't the bill collector.
Oh, the spouse?
The spouse was the bill collector.
Oh, yeah.
But they were both in the medical field.
I see.
So she was in the medical field.
Well,
anyway.
In the aspects of health, you know, hopefully Kay will have some good news and get back to us.
I hope so. Yeah, it's been... difficult for her the last 10 months. So,
we're just about the tail end
of
the show.
We're wrapping up, yeah.
And, you know, when Friday is going to be our 1,000 shows, which maybe is a record of some kind somewhere out there.
Somewhere out there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So we're referencing all these songs.
Yeah, Disney.
Linda Ronstadt. Isn't it somewhere out there? And Peeba Bryson, I think.
Yeah, there's whatever.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
So I think we're going to turn off the show today for the time being.
Oh, my God.
No one's
showing up. James Ingram. My mistake. James Ingram.
And
we're turning off the show for the day. I think there's going to be an adjustment in the schedule next week. Because of the 25th Friday. So that will be forthcoming. The schedule for next week's shows. Is there anything else we want to say before we close up here?
No, I think, you know, hopefully we gave Kay some nice feedback. And we'll return on Friday with our show number 1,000.
Okay. Everybody have a great couple days until Friday, and we will speak to you then. Bye.